Happy New Year, ladies, gentlemen, and everything else of the fine audience of Worst Foot Forward. Spoiler alert, he's not dead.
Who, me or Paul McCartney?
Why are you bringing Paul McCartney into this?
I thought we had some sort of Worst Foot conspiracy theory like the Beatles did, and maybe Barry died. If you play episode 69 backwards, you hear Barry is dead. New Barry actor.
Yeah, but sorry, let me introduce the one and only Barry Shears, who is here to take his place. Listen to him. Can you hear any difference in his mellifluous tones now that he's missing half a lung?
Yeah, I am alive. This is the first thing that we've recorded basically since the operation that I had back in December. If anyone missed that, I had... long story short, I had a very mild form of cancer, which I had some pain in my side in October. Doctors found a spot in my lung, diagnosed it in November as a tumour, which needed to be removed along with between a third and half of my right lung. I keep getting differing reports depending on which consultant I talk to about how much exactly they took out. So maybe it changes depending on whether you breathe in or breathe out.
That would make sense, yeah. That's what I like from cancer consultants is precision with mathematics.
Yes.
And I'd like to tell you now that Barry is now recuperating in a three-wheeled wheelchair with a tartan rug across his legs whilst wearing a velour smoking jacket and coughing occasionally into a blood-stained handkerchief.
I am coughing occasionally, thankfully not blood-stained. Operation went fine. I've had I'm about 5 weeks into a 4 to 6 week recovery, so in theory I should be nearly better, but had a couple of fun things like an infected scar and a very persistent cough, which every medical person I alert to the cough goes, is it COVID? And I'm like, it's not, because I've not been outside. I've had half a lung removed. So, but apart from the cough, I am, and occasional breathlessness, which makes recordings in the future sound very sexy. I'm nearly there. But Ben, yeah. Ben isn't.
Yeah, plot twist. I do not also have cancer, thankfully. That would be preposterous, and as though 4 years of mocking the worst that humanity has produced has come to bite us in the ass. But what I do have is a dead cracked tooth that has become so infected I have an abscess. And whilst Barry can't really see this at the moment, and also because the antibiotics are making me heal, a couple of days ago, my jaw was so swollen that my wife looked at me, laughed and went, you have a jowl. And then she laughed again. And I said, why are you laughing again? And she said, because I've never heard that word used in the singular.
Like a lopsided basset hound.
Yeah. Oh, no, 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 no.
So you're going to have to go and have it out, aren't you?
I am going to have to go and have it out with the dentist.
Your whole face has to come out.
Yes. I'm going to come back as Nicolas Cage. I'm going to spend the next 10 days drugged up to my eyeballs on painkillers and antibiotics, and then I'm going to go and visit a dentist who has never done anything on me before, because it is the first time I visited her since I moved to South London. But luckily, she seems smashing, and she is going to whip my seventh tooth on the lower left side of my jaw out and defeat it in trial by combat. And then all will be well. This, then, ladies and gentlemen, is a long and short way of telling you that for the first time in our 195 episode history, we are reaching into our vaults and bringing out a placeholder episode. We do have one episode we could give to you, which is all about the world's worst artist, but it remains unedited because if I stare at a computer screen for more than about 15 minutes, I feel quite ill and begin writhing round on the floor. So instead, we've reached into our vaults and we picked out what... It's certainly my favourite episode. I don't know if it's yours.
It's definitely up there. It's one of our favourite... Like, any time we're telling people, oh, if people are like, what's your podcast like, and they recommend me an episode, we'll often recommend The World's Worst Pirate with Will Seward. And as I said to Ben just before we started recording, thanks apparently to TikTok, there is big sea shanty energy on the internet at the moment.
Yep.
So it feels quite appropriate to re-release an episode we both love with sea shanty undertones as well.
Yeah, the Tillerman has told us, sorry, not the Tillerman, the Wellerman has told us to bring this up from Davy Jones's locker. So if you've heard it before, it's absolutely worth a re-listen. But I know we've had an awful lot of new listeners since episode 50-something came out, whichever it is. And so it is well worth your time listening to it. We very much hope be back in slightly better fettle next week with a new episode. Before we do such things, a small bit of housekeeping, Mr. McStay.
Yes, Ben and I, as we often do at the start of a new year, have been putting our heads together, thinking about things we'd like to do in the new year. You know, we're going to be reaching out and trying to do more live shows when that's a possible thing. We're both talking about trying to go and make guest appearances on other podcasts and try and keep growing the audience, which we've done last year. It's been lovely to have so many new people join us. And to that end, we're trying to think of fun and exciting ways we can keep engaging with you lot, the Worst Foot Forward listeners. And we've had some ideas. Later on, not immediately, we're thinking of doing, you know, an Ask Me Anything episode, maybe a live stream Ask Me Anything thing where Ben and I basically will answer whatever your questions are. If you want to ask Ben just exactly how he gets his hair so curly, or the least offensive way to say hello to an Irishman at the top of the morning, then you know, we'll be able to do that. Or if you have any sort of questions about the show or our favorite trivia and things like that, we'll do one of those. We also have for a few months now had an idea about trying to do a crowdsourced episode where we'd have you guys send in facts or record sort of what your favourite worst fact would be, and then see if Ben and I can best it with some quick research and stuff like that. That's another thing we'd like to do, maybe for our 250th episode. We haven't even done 200 yet, but we're already thinking ahead to that. But more immediately, a couple of people reached out on Twitter and said we should have a Discord channel, which a quick Google tells me is a place for fans of, you know, for fan groups or organisations or societies to get together and chat about shared interests. And various YouTube channels and podcasts do have their own Discord channel where fans of the show can, you know, get together, share memes, discuss episodes, just chat about whatever in our case, literally anything, and how bad it all is. So if having a Worst Foot Forward Discord channel is something you guys would be interested in, let us know. Reach out to us on Twitter on @worstfoot. Send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Message us on Facebook, however you want to get in touch with us, or message Ben and I. Ben's on @BenVandeveld and I'm on @BazMcStay. And say I or an A, because if we did set one up, we'd probably need some fan help in terms of moderating it, but it would be a way for you guys to chat to each other. We could dip in and out and do those sort of Ask Me Anythings and other, you know, impromptu fun bits of streaming and engagement. So, yeah, let us know if that's something you'd be interested in doing. A couple of people have said it to us. We want to see if enough of you are interested in it to make it worth your while and our while.
Damn right. And then the one other thing that we talked about is we want to try and mix up some of the extra content we're giving you on Patreon. We'll still give you offcuts of stuff that didn't make the show, or us mercilessly ribbing each other for totally fucking up a piece of information or an intro. But we thought of other stuff we could do. Barry came up with the idea of having worst foot challenges, where particularly during lockdown, we, in no way infringing the copyright of the show Taskmaster, set each other a monthly challenge, which we then attempt, film, upload, and have you vote on who did better.
Yeah.
Which already, as I say it out loud, sounds both glorious fun and an impertinence and to our spouses.
Yes, out of the house. Ben needs to count how much pasta is in his cupboards.
So let us know if you like the idea of that, and equally, if whether you are a Patreon donor or not, if there is something you think, I'd like to hear a bit more of this, please do let us know as we try and level up our podcast all about people who have spent their lives levelling down.
Yes, and if you want to check out Patreon, we're on patreon.com/worstfootforward, where a whole load of you have been very kindly supporting us, some of you for a long time, some of you very recently, and there are all sorts of, as Ben mentions, there's this extra content we're talking about, there are other goals that we're trying to hit in the coming weeks and months of certain levels of when we hit a certain number of donors, we'll do new things. One of those being another treasure hunt, like the one we streamed during the early days of lockdown. We're going to do another one of those probably in the next month to 6 weeks, again, when we're both a bit haler and heartier, and it so we're figuring out how we might do that, but it's one of those you'll be able to watch along, play along with, and if you're not able to watch it and play along live, there'll be a recorded release of it for you to enjoy afterwards.
Yes, there will. I think that is all of our sails raised and our main
our mains stayed.
Yeah. That I tried to rustle up some more nautical vocabulary and realised that I have none.
We've spliced our jibs, walked our planks, scuttled our buckets, and swashed our buckles.
Yeah, so Barry, do you know why we are doing an episode this week on the world's worst pirate?
Because we are!
Correct me, hearty. Enjoy next week when you'll be back in the company of old Half-a-Lung McStay. And 3% toothless Vanderbilt. Yo ho ho.
Amen. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And this is Worst Foot Recording number 54, and one can't help but draw similarities between the podcast and famed New York nightclub Studio 54, both roiling hotbeds renowned for sex, drugs, music, art, celebrity and sleaze, basking in a glittering reputation maybe never truly deserved, were a perfect match. So, while I check to see if I can make room for both Freddie Mercury and Andy Warhol, let me introduce my co-host, the Bianca to my Jagger, the Debbie to my Harry, and the Diane to my Von Furstenberg. It's Ben Vanderveld. Excellent Foley work.
Thanks, pal. Oh man, that mirror is covered in powdered lemsip.
For the purpose of that, Studio 54 was only open for 33 months.
Is that all?
Yeah, it was just barely 3 years.
But it's like Tony Wilson's The Factory in Manchester. That was only open for maximum 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, they burn bright and vast.
Yeah. And then disappear into a hellscape.
I think Studio 54 is a theatre now.
Weary.
Yeah. I love that also, this has nothing to do with what today's topic is, or indeed our guest, who I think, with the greatest respect, would look out of place in Studio 54.
Let us explain why, although that laugh might be a clue. Our guest this week is an actor, comic, storyteller, and adventurer. All you really need to know about our guest is contained in the opening 3 words of his website, which simply say, "Enter ye here."
Oh, that's the tattoo I have on my name.
He is an Edinburgh Festival legend who has put on such shows as Spooky Ghost Tales, More Spooky Ghost Tales.
Spooky Ghost Tales 3, three spooky, three
serious. Yeah, Spooky Ghost Tales, Tokyo Drift. Socialist Fairy Tales, Magnificent Bastard, and Will Seward has a really good go at alchemy. He can currently be seen in pantomime as King Rat in Dick Whittington, of course, and as you can hear, he has one of the finest bass baritone laughs in all of Christendom. It is the lovely Will Seward. Hello, Will.
Hello, Ben.
He looks like he's straight off the fishing boat.
Yeah. That is true. That's a lovely sort of lifeboatman's jumper that you're wearing.
I got it in Cornwall.
Did you really?
Yeah.
From
Edinburgh, Bourne, Middle.
You went to the West Country to get some Scottish.
just one. And I also ate some
just
magnificent.
Was it for a bet?
No. I presume you also ate some magnificent Cornish haggis as well.
I did. And those Cornish bagpipers are tremendous.
And enjoyed some Cornish devolution.
Yeah. We were talking before the show started about the fact that whilst you are a magnificent performer, you are also an adventurer in both a theoretical and soon to be a practical sense.
Yes. I'm planning an expedition to El Dorado.
Lost city of gold.
Mm. Yeah.
Where do we think El Dorado is?
Probably Peru.
Why?
So, originally they thought it was in Colombia. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not there. That's because they mixed up rumours of the Muisca king, El Dorado, the golden man, with other rumours of a lost city of gold. So a conquistador called Quesada went and conquered the Muisca, and they did find a lake. Which is full of gold, but they can't get to the gold, hilariously. Because the
gold is at the bottom of the lake.
Totally.
They need to use the Goon Show approach to that and get Neddy Seagoon to drink the lake.
Someone else tried to empty it with buckets. Quesada managed to actually build a channel in the lake, which collapsed and many died. In the 19th century, an American company managed to drain the lake with pipes, got to the bottom and found that they did see gold glittering under the silt and the mud, but the silt and the mud would kill anyone who went into it.
Because it was so thick, it was just like quicksand.
Yeah. Wow. So they waited till the lake dried, or the lake bed dried. When that happened, it dried as solid as concrete. No one could touch it.
Wow.
It's been very illegal since the 50s to drain Lake Guatavita. And rightly so. It was an eco-disaster every time they did it.
I love that it was an eco-disaster of the 19th century, because it sounds like the sort of shit an evil oil company would do.
Yeah.
But no, just
yeah.
Vainglorious gold hunters.
Yeah. It's not unlike... do you know the Oak Island money pit?
No.
Oh, this is fit. It's off Nova Scotia. Was it the 19th century? Either the 19th or the late 18th century. Some local youths were wandering around and found an area of recently dug soil and a branch just over it, which had obviously just been used as a pulley. And there was a lot of pirate activity on Oak Island, which was well known. And so they went, hurrah, pirate treasure. We found it. They've just been here. So they started digging. And they found, about 6 feet under the ground, some oak boards. And they went, hurrah, the treasure is under this. Took out the boards, nothing but more earth. They dug down under the oak boards, found more oak boards, again, about 6 feet down. Took those up, nothing there but soil. They went further. They found stone slabs. They went, hurrah, this is the treasure. Took those up, nothing but soil. They're Christ. Still digging.
It sounds like... a house sank. Yeah, like a three-story house.
I just imagine
floorboards, some room, some floorboards, some rooms, some stone slabs.
Yeah.
In my mind, it was like that Bugs Bunny cartoon where Elmer Fudd's trying to get to him, and he just keeps nailing up more doors.
Yes,
Elmer Fudd keeps opening the door, keeps nailing up more doors.
Yeah, much like it. Yeah.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Cool. Good luck for your mission from El Dorado. I sort of feel like we're going to have to do a return episode when you come back from El Dorado.
Talk about the world's worst expedition.
Yeah. Absolutely. Before we talk about today's topic, Will, what are you worst at in the world? And don't say finding lost cities.
No, I'm best at that. I am terrible at making sandwiches.
That is such a key skill for an exhibition.
Expedition.
Yeah.
An exhibition. Yeah.
Oh, that too. Like, if you're wandering through the Peruvian jungle and someone's going, has anyone got any egg and crust? Yes, but I haven't cut the crusts off.
Well, surely it'll be marmalade sandwiches if you're in Peru.
Ah, yes, very much.
Feed the locals, fit in.
Under all our hats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why are you bad at making sandwiches?
I just fundamentally don't understand them. I love them. But I...
remember that story you told us about the layers of, mud and wood and mud? If you replace those with food, that's a sandwich.
Of course! They're just Oak
just
Island
need to explain
food.
It to him on his own level, Ben.
That, yeah, that's a good point.
Oak Island food. Yeah, we called it that instead of sandwiches.
The problem is that Will is spending 40 long trying to alchemise money into sandwiches without being the intervening part of going to Tesco.
Yeah. Oh, I can buy them like a boss. Watch me buy sandwiches, but I can't make them.
Would you be a rectangle or a triangle?
A rectangle.
Yes. I'm a rectangle as well.
Yeah.
I know the shops are all triangles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredibly annoying. There's nothing to bite on the corners.
No, but it's because Pythagoras invented the sandwich.
No, the Earl of Sandwich invented Pythagoras.
Ah, good point.
I think. Hang on. He asked, bring me two slices of bread with a Greek philosopher between them.
Fun story about the Earl of Sandwich.
Go on.
It's one of my favourite things that's ever happened ever. He was an associate of Lord Rochester, John Wilmot, and they were both members of the Hellfire Club.
John Wilmot being the libertine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
The Hellfire Club generally weren't Satanists. They just had massive orgies. And one day, somebody suggested, why don't we actually do a black mass? And Rochester was really not up for it. He went, no, the orgies are fine. Why mess with the pattern? So he got the job of getting all the props. Somewhere in 18th century London, he found a baboon and purchased the baboon. shaved the baboon. Probably got servants to shave the baboon. Disguised it as Satan. He placed it inside the altar.
As Satan.
Yeah. Placed the furious shaved baboon inside the altar that they were going to be using, because he was in charge of making that. Didn't tell anyone it was there. And then at a key moment in the satanic mass, released it. And it leapt onto the Earl of Sandwich's back and started attacking him. And the Earl of Sandwich fell to his knees and repented.
And went, Lord, I shall invent a type of food that is one piece of bread with food in between it and another piece of bread. If only you get this baboon devil off my back.
And they never spoke again. Wow.
What better subject could we talk about than the world's worst pirate? A specialist subject of yours, I believe.
Oh, I love pirates.
Love
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You, from someone who looks and indeed sounds like one. We're going to come to you in a second, but we're going to start with Ben. Ben, what have you learned this week?
In the early modern period, there's this brilliant blurring of lines scene. What is a pirate? You know, someone who's basically in a illegal, organised criminal who wanders round ripping off everyone and who is a privateer who has a letter of marque from the government going, you're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
But my favourite bit of etymology is a buccaneer.
Mm.
And a buccaneer, where buccaneer comes from, is the word buchan. And buchan was a wooden frame used by Arawak or Carib native people of the West Indies to spear a manatee over a fire and make smoked manatee barbecue.
And delicious.
Yeah, and buchan turned into the bougan, used by French settlers in Tortuga and Hispaniola to do it to wild boars, and they would create viande bougan, which is jerked meat, or literally jerky. So when you saw someone going, I'm a buccaneer, what they're really saying is that I am a smoked manatee jerky.
I'm a jerk.
Yeah. I'm a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, when we think of pirates, particularly because of Pirates of the Caribbean, we've tended to think of like 17th, 18th century piracy.
Golden age, yeah.
The golden age of piracy.
Mm. Which is really short.
Yeah, it
so
is.
Yeah, yeah,
it's only
yeah.
about 50, 60 years.
Yeah, because the gold got nicked by pirates.
Yes. Then in the Silver Age.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Bronze Age. The Bronze Age, Stone Age. What the hell is going on?
This guy is the first guy I want to talk about. A guy called Eustace the Monk.
I love Eustace the Monk.
Yeah. Sure, well, you might be able to tell me more about him than I've already found out. So he was around back end of the 12th century, start of the 13th century, operating mostly in the English Channel. I'm just going to quickly run down his CV. He was a mercenary, a pirate. He studied black magic in Toledo, Spain, and became a Benedictine monk. In the history of the Dukes of Normandy, whoever wrote that wrote, no one would believe the marvels he accomplished, nor those which happened to him many times over. He eventually left the Benedictine monastery and went off to avenge his murdered father. And he fought in many battles in the Channel and was eventually captured in the middle of a fight between the English and French fleets when the English fleet released powdered lime into the atmosphere and basically blinded everyone. And he couldn't see where he was going and he crashed and they captured him.
And then they basically went, we're going to execute you, and it's up to you whether the place of your execution is the side of the boat. We just attach you to a trebuchet and kill you there.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Do you know any more about Eustace?
No, you've covered the cool bits. the boats they'd have been using then would have been essentially just big, massive rafts. They were utterly shit. He was a pirate in a very narrow area of sea. Mm. And it's remarkable he wasn't caught earlier. It's just that no one had navies. Yeah,
man monks were clever. Yeah. They knew stuff. Yeah. Benedictines were pretty clever guys.
Yeah, well, they'd have a little bit of the Benedictine and go, I think I can capture a ship.
I'm imagining there's some... somewhere in Gloucestershire probably still does, you know, monk trebucheting, like as an annual, like cheese rolling, like, as an annual festival.
Yeah,
fire a monk off a catapult into the sea.
So I liked him, and there's loads of, like, looking at various bits of history of pirates, I found loads of random warrior monks and Welshmen turning up in Madagascar and all sorts of shit like that. But I've basically got two main candidates. The first one is one of the most famous ones. It is Stede Bonnet, the gentleman pirate. So he was a retired army major. He owned a plantation in Barbados. He had a wife, he had kids, he was pretty wealthy. And he was living in the Caribbean in the early 18th century. By all accounts, pretty happy chappy.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically he had a midlife crisis and went, I'm going to become a pirate. A contemporary account that says he had some discomforts he found in married state led to this hunger of going a pirating.
Mm. Secret gay. Secret gay.
Also that.
Being a pirate was quite good if you wanted to, you know, bum.
Oh, it's great.
You ever know about matelotage?
Excuse me?
Oh, matelotage. It's kind of like, it was nearly a same-sex marriage. Two pirates, generally male, because pretty much all of them were, would basically sign a contract where they would share each other's booty. Sorry, I just had to say that. They would agree to share booty, and then if one of them died, then the other would inherit their goods. So it was kind of a life insurance thing. And it took on, they lived together, and a lot of them took on a sexual element as well.
Mm.
But there's a book by B.R. Burr called Sodomy and the Pirate Edition, which is brilliant. Have you read it?
No.
Oh, I've read extracts of it. It's fucking brilliant. I want to find a copy of it. But yeah, in 1645, you mentioned Tortuga. It was it's an island. Is it part of Haiti, I think? Tortuga. In the Caribbean. And the French governor of Tortuga requested that France send over hundreds of prostitutes to Tortuga. Female prostitutes to try and discourage the gayness that was happening on Tortuga. Because there were so many pirates and there was all this matelotage taking place.
like sexual UN peacekeepers brought in.
They dropped
prostitutes.
8 bastards of prostitutes. But what happened? Well, it just led to bisexual three-ways, guys.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I do love that. Like, this must be true of other professions in history that made it easier to be gay.
A lot of pirates were navy or were privateers who just went, you know, professional.
Yeah.
When they decide they could get more money from being a pirate, or eventually the European government signed peace treaty, so privateering against foreign nations was not allowed anymore. So suddenly loads of these privateers were unemployed when they went, well, I'll just be a pirate now.
Yeah.
So a lot of them had navy training, where in the navy obviously homosexuality was not exactly smiled upon. But they go, okay, well, I can be gay and happy as a pirate and do the same thing I did for a bit more money.
I love the thought of these fierce homos of the Caribbean wandering around thieving gold and then just having wild gay sex while pissed on rum.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, okay, brilliant. Well, that's had another string to his bow.
Yeah.
So, whilst he may have just had a very unhappy marriage because his wife was shit, or maybe he just wanted some sweet, sweet, salty cock of the seas.
Please, Ben, it's the wooden leg.
imagine the splinters.
Oh, the horror.
But anyway, Stede has decided to go and become a pirate. He has no seafaring ability whatsoever.
An army man, not a navy man.
And barely an army man as well. He was in the Barbados militia, which is not an army at all. he was a horrible, evil slave owner. And his entire job was to be frightening so that the slaves didn't rebel. Yeah. He just looked impressive. That was his job.
Oh, God. I like him even less now. Yeah. First thing that I'm looking for in a pirate is one who's good at stealing ships. Is that what Steed did? Fuck no! Steed bought his ship.
Yeah.
In fact, he had it custom built for him by the shipsmiths in the yard. Now, there are a variety of good names of ships. Obviously, you want to have pirate ships that have something that will strike fear into your opponents, like the Black Pearl. What was his called? The Revenge.
Which is like the John Smith of pirate
ships. Yeah, it absolutely
it really is.
And also, yeah, like you said, you're a British slave owner. You have no one that you need revenge over. early days, he got a little bit cocky because he succeeded in capturing a couple of little ships. And then one day he was sailing through the Caribbean where he saw a man of war and went, I'm going to have a go at that, mate. Yeah. And he was the equivalent of Carlton from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air trying to start a fight with Anthony Joshua. Just a terrible, terrible idea. But the first fun meeting of his is when he meets Edward Teach, better known as Blackbeard.
At least he had the good grace to name his ship Revenge with two words in front of it.
Yeah.
The Queen Anne's.
Although he got there first. He was the he was the hipster of the pirates.
Yeah. The Blackbeard.
Yeah. And he just wandered around on the deck of his ship on a penny farthing, going, this is actually 200 years early, but who cares? What I love about Blackbeard is when Steed Bonnet turns up and he goes, can I sail with you? And Blackbeard goes, sure, mate, absolutely, of course. And it appears that after about a week or two, Blackbeard goes, this guy's a fucking moron. And he invites Steed Bonnet aboard his ship and just goes, no, why don't we just, like, you know, we can be on the same ship together like men of the sea. And as soon as he does that, he goes, right, first mate, over to that ship, that is now our ship. And apparently when Blackbeard, who took over the fleet, would go around raiding various ports and attacking various ships, Steed Bonnet would just roam the deck in his dressing gown and nightshirt whilst drinking port and rum.
He read a lot. He spent a lot of time in his cabin reading books. And the other thing was, he paid his crew wages.
Yes!
He didn't, like most pirate ships operated on, you know, shares of the spoils and commission. He was just like, no, you know, I've got some money. You're going to be on 10 quid a week. 10 quid a week. Is that fine? Good, 10 quid a week.
Yes, and I would like to come back with to be unionised within the next fortnight or so. And then you can get dental as well. Dental. They dock, I believe, at Tortuga. Edward Teach goes, listen, you just chill out here. I'm just going to pop off, do a quick couple of missions, get some supplies. You just relax, Steed. Steed goes, yeah, not a problem. You're my best mate. A few days later, he pops back to the Revenge to find that it has been stripped of all of its supplies, all of its wood. It's just a skeleton in the bay. He's so hapless.
So bad.
But eventually, he manages to return to piracy, and he actually gets a little bit nastier. He manages to raid a couple of ships. He starts giving out booty instead of wages. Yep. He definitely kills some members of his crew to keep discipline in order. And eventually, Colonel William Rhett, who is a British captain, says, that's enough, and he chases after him. And eventually, he defeats him on the Cape Fear River and imprisons Steed Bonnet. Steed, like all good pirates, manages to enact an escape. However, he escapes directly into a swamp and gets recaptured again. Then it comes to his trial. He defends himself. Fair enough, that's pretty bold. He calls a member of his own crew as a character witness. What's astonishing is because he has got this reputation as the gentleman pirate, the people of Barbados don't want him to be hung. And there's many appeals for clemency, and he actually he is sort of sentenced seven times, and eventually gets to the point where he says to the governor, give me clemency. I tell you what, don't hang me. Just chop off my arms and my legs and I'll never be a pirate again.
So good. Just leave my torso ahead.
The governor clearly goes, stop being so silly, and kills him.
Yeah.
But he's not my choice. I've got a tiny brief word for Benjamin Hornigold.
I love Benjamin. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
This is my absolute favourite pirating story that I found. He was a pretty goddamn good pirate, but once he captured a ship purely to steal the hats of the people on it.
Which is how your wife and you met.
Yeah. Yeah, she was flying the Jolly Roger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Basically, and the story was...
Were they particularly good hats?
No. I wish it had been that they were saying about it, going, that is a magnificent hat.
Try cornered hats. He only did rectangular hats.
Yeah. That's how you could tell the different kinds of pirates.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there was ones who would wear the dodecahedron hat. Yeah. Dodo feathers on it. But he apparently, no, they were just on the lash the night before and had thrown their hats overboard. And they're like, fuck, lads, where are our hats? Oh, man. That Marlin is wearing my tricorner hat.
It'd be like a graduation ceremony.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's jackass for pirates is what that is. But my nomination for the worst pirate in history is Charles Swan. Now, Charles Swan, first of all, the name of his boat. Now, obviously, like I said before, you want the boat, the name of the boat, to strike fear into the people of the seas. His boat was called the Cygnet.
Oh, I really like what he did.
That's really cute. And I imagine what it was, there was one fuck off massive galleon and then loads of little tugs following behind it. He was forced into piracy by his crew and kept writing letters back to the owner of the Cygnet to say, please, will you make them stop? And if they won't stop, please, can you get a pardon from James II?
Oh, no.
Whilst at the same time still looting up and down the coast of South America. But he was shit. In 1684, he attacked a town called Patia. Didn't get any bounty whatsoever, so just burnt the town to the ground. 1685, he attacked and seized a place called Saint Pecagua, but lost 50 men in the process. Then he went, right, next year, right, this year, lads, we're going for the big one. 1686, they failed to intercept a treasure galleon going from Manila. At this point, the crew were pretty angry, and they said, listen, if we don't get any booty, we are going to start eating the officers. At which point, Swan, who was by all accounts a very fat man, pointed to one of his officers, Will Dumbier, and said, well, he's too lean for good meat, isn't he? What's wrong with him?
He wanted so badly to not be a pirate, he was willing for them to eat him.
Yes. Just anyway out.
I'll be first. Gas Mark 5.
Eventually, in 1690, he ends up in the Sultanate of Mindanao, which I believe is around sort of Indonesia, Malaysia, the East Indies. And he's working for Raja Laut, who is the authority in that area. His crew are so pissed off at this that they mutiny and they fuck off. And he becomes an officer in Raja Laut's army, which, you know, pretty good backup prize. However, he then attempts to escape with £5,000, which he claims belongs to the company who owns the Cygnet. At which point Raja Laut goes, right, fuck you, mate. Sends all of his crew after him, and they capsize him, and he is speared in the water by Raja Laut's warriors. And that's where he dies. So, for the fact that he never appears to have successfully carried out any piracy of note, his crew hated him, they wanted to eat him, and he invited them to do so. And most of all the time, he was writing sad letters back to Mummy at home, going, I don't even want to be a pirate. Charles Swan is my nomination for the worst pirate in history.
Very, very good.
Each proper pirate ship, not Sheet Bonnet's ship, had a set of articles which would be signed when you joined. And they were really fair. The best one was probably Bartholomew Roberts' one. Mm-hmm. Love Bartholomew Roberts. He doesn't come into this because he was great. he never drank rum. He would only drink tea. And he used to read his crew Bible stories and had a lights out after eight rule. Literally, a lights out after eight
it's
rule.
It's that whole Navy thing, because a lot of them were quite regimented. They operated quite strong ships. They had votes for captains and things like that. The insurance, you make a joke about it. Captain Morgan, as in the rum, Henry Morgan, when he led an assault on Panama, he had a crew of 2,000 sailors across his various ships. And they all signed a thing agreeing that if they lost a hand or a foot, they'd get 600 pieces of eight. If they lost both legs, they'd get 1,800. One eye, 200, and 2,000 pieces of eight if they were blinded, which is the equivalent of about $153,000 today.
Oh, that's astonishing.
As insurance goes, it's pretty good.
one of Morgan's lieutenants on the way got shot in half by a cannon while attempting to take a fort and kept fighting.
Whoa!
Just got himself held up by both arms and
like
kept...
the Black Knight.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's but a flesh wound.
I'll bite your legs off.
Amazing.
Another wonderful one. They kept having to take out these forts so that Panama wouldn't know they were coming, which turned out to be utterly futile. It was an enormous pirate fleet. The fort didn't stand a chance, but had to be seen to fight. So they pretended to have a battle so that the residents of the town that the fort was guarding would write home about how brave the commander had been. They fired blanks at each other for ages and then staged a takeover.
Did they have rehearsals?
Yeah, it's not good when a battle starts with places, people, places.
But then when Panama had been taken, one ship, with all the most important citizens, a lot of the booty was going to come from ransoms, had sailed off also with a lot of the town's treasure. Mm. They sent the fastest ship they could get their hands on after it, failed, didn't catch it. And then one of the stupid pirates set fire to the town. So all the priceless tapestries and carpets and scented woods got burned down as well. So the take was much less than they thought, and he wasn't going to be able to pay this massive army of pirates what he'd promised.
Yeah.
So, they sailed off with all the treasure in one boat, conveniently Morgan's boat, to an island, had a massive drunken feast. All the pirates passed out except Morgan's chosen crew, and he just abandoned them there.
Amazing.
Am I allowed to slightly reinterpret the question and go for it. The most morally bad pirate?
Any way
absolutely.
You like.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to go for Jean-David Nau, François Lolonnais.
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
he is vicious.
Yeah, he's utterly foul. He took Maracaibo, which is very impressive. Maracaibo, it's an awesome city on the coast of South America, which is awesome because it's at the mouth of a massive, massive lake, and also behind another massive, massive lake. So it's the most, like, if you were playing Civ 5, it's where you'd put a city, because you'd be able to sail straight through it, because you can invent canals.
It's like Venice,
away.
If Venice had Venice Harbour the other side of it as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's also one of the ones that Captain Blood takes in the book Captain Blood.
Cool.
And Henry Morgan at one point took it as well. But yeah, that's Lolonnais's one claim to fame. Other than that, it was just, I'm going to torture my way into notoriety. He invented a game. Monks, again, there's lots of monks in the history of piracy. Lolonnais hated monks for some reason. So he invented this sport called monk riding.
That's the town over in Gloucestershire for the monk trebuchets. When the monk lands, everyone piles on top.
Oh no, it's even more horrible than that. How graphically horrible am I allowed to?
As much as you like.
Very well. So
for listeners of an uncomfortable disposition, how have you gotten this far?
when an unfortunate monk was captured by Lolonnais, he would open their side and take out a little bit of intestine.
Oh, yeah.
He'd then hammer the little bit of intestine to his mast, which must have been very unstructurally sound because of all the nails going into it. And he would then get people to ride the monks and chase them round the mast with the red hot things.
Yeah.
And
their intestines out.
Oh, my
God!
They just,
This... This is not atypical of the sort of things he did. Pirate atrocities were pretty... Or, like, cool though Henry Morgan was, God, he did some awful things. Roasting alive was a common pirate thing.
Walking the plank isn't as bad as... And didn't happen as much as keel hauling, which
one
is
Dutch
fucking
ship.
Awful.
Oh, keel hauling's foul, yeah.
And basically throw someone... They'd tie a rope to you, throw you off the side of the boat, and then pull you up, but from the other side of the boat, so you were dragged underneath the keel of the boat, which would obviously be covered in shellfish and wood and splinters and everything. So if you did survive, if they did it fast, you'd be flayed, and if they did slowly, you'd be drowned. So, you know, walking the plank and plopping into the water is... it's a cakewalk compared to that.
Yeah. This is more a punishment for infractions rather than a horrible thing to do to prisoners, but I forget which pirate this was, but one of them used to, again, invented this thing where you'd be strapped to a thing, not unlike a ducking stool, and you'd be plunged into the salt water and then brought out again. And apparently, if you do that in the hot Caribbean sun, it burns you.
Oh, yes.
You get... Yeah. I've utilised that in getting suntans. When I go on holiday and I find that I'm not tanning fast enough, which is often, I run in and out of the sea for a while.
Oh, good God.
And it works like a charm.
And you're well seasoned as well.
Yeah. There's a wonderful film. I say a wonderful film. It's a terrible film, but it's wonderful for that reason. Have you heard of The Island? Not the DiCaprio one.
No. That's the beach, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. What am I talking about? Yeah. This is a mid-career Michael Caine film, back when he was taking every script.
after Harry Lime, before Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Was it around the Jaws 4 area where he went...
That's the one.
Yeah, where like the opening scene is set in the Caribbean, and he went, yep, I'll take it.
Yeah, and again, it's in the Caribbean. So, Michael Caine is a pioneering journalist for, I believe, the Washington Post or the New York Times, and he goes to investigate some disappearances in Florida, telling his wife that he's taking their son to Disneyland. When he arrives, he gets a boat from the ropiest man in the world, an old 60s character actor who is sort of visibly giggling evilly while giving him this boat, wearing a stained white suit. His hair of the boat. They go out in the boat and are attacked by 17th century pirates. Led.
They were New York Times readers and they didn't like the Washington Post.
Yeah, and they're led by Lolonay, who is played by David Warner. But it's not Lolonay, it's his descendant. These pirates have gone to Florida, lived there and become inbred and weird for the last 400 years in an enclave from society. And it's great.
It's called Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's got Dudley Sutton in it from Off of Lovejoy. As the pirate doctor, Dr. Brazil, who talks in that voice. And at one point they fight a boat full of ninjas for no reason. And one of the ninjas have guns.
Well, we don't have to bother doing World's Worst Pirate Movie, do we?
Wow.
Yeah. So do the pirates, though. They shoot one of the ninjas out from the mast. The ninja falls to the ground, and Dr. Brazil says, "Nobody touch that man! He has the dropping sickness! A terrible touch of the dropsy!" Lolonay is played by David Warner, of all people.
Very good. Is Lolonay the one who ate a man's heart?
That's him. Yeah, it's even better. He ate a man's heart, cut his heart out of his chest while he was still alive, ate part of it, and then threw the rest of the heart at somebody else.
And shouted, "Food fight!" Where would you think the top nation for pirate attacks is currently, 2016?
South Sudan.
No.
And it's, I mean, the obvious thing... says Barry with his QI buzzer eyes ready is Somalia, but it's not.
It's not Somalia.
But
is it in
the Gulf of Aden? Is it round?
No, it's Indonesia actually.
I can totally see that. Yeah.
Apparently, in 2016 there were 49 pirate attacks around Indonesia. 36 Nigeria. No. 14 India. There have been 169 attacks so far in 2017. Recognised pirate attacks.
That's not. But
well, yeah, you could also visit. The International Chamber of Commerce has a website. The Commercial Crime Services has a live piracy report, which I went on yesterday.
Great.
Which basically has like the 10 most recent pirate attacks.
Is that like Sky Sports News,
it's
but
like
for piracy?
It's like the football track on Soccer Sunday.
Amazing.
Soccer Sunday, yeah. Modern piracy costs between $13 and $16 billion a year. But it has fallen. There were 500 modern piracy attacks in 2010, and as I say, we're down to 169.
It's nice to know that something bad is decreasing in the world,
isn't it? Yeah. And there are a lot. People are investing a lot in anti-pirate measures, so ships have razor wire on or electric fences on the decks. They have high-pressure water hoses to fire at pirate ships. And this very cool thing, a sound gun, which is basically a laser which can daze a target from more than a mile away. So it doesn't actually, like, damage you, but it can just make you really woozy, like it's affecting your eardrums and your balance. Yeah. So people are fixing these to their ships to protect themselves.
Are they sure it's a laser gun or not just Nickelback's latest album?
Both would probably work, to be fair. International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Oh, yeah. My friend Tom used to run that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you know the date, International Pirate Day?
September the 18th.
19th. Very close. Wow.
Obviously, yeah. I know International sort of like a Pirate Day Eve.
Where you put out your boots. Yeah. John Silver comes down the chimney and steals your boots. Yeah. Just one of them.
Yeah,
just
obviously
the one.
You put up a palm tree in the corner of the room.
Yeah, no, it was founded in 1995 by two guys, John Bauer, whose pirate name is Old Chum Bucket, and Mark Summers, whose pirate name is Captain Slappy. And they were playing racquetball, and one of them injured himself and shouted out, "Arr!" in pain. And that's when the idea was born. They were playing this game on June the 6th, but out of respect for the D-Day landings, they decided that would not be an appropriate date.
Good lads.
And they went for Summers' ex-wife's birthday instead.
Oh, that's lovely.
The patron saint of International Talk Like a Pirate Day, would you want hazard a guess at who it might be?
Oh,
Talking Like a Pirate, who would be the most likely?
Right. Oh, Robert Newton.
Robert Newton, yeah, of course. Robert Newton is the reason everyone speaks in West Country accents when they're doing a pirate voice. Because he is the
Long
John Silver from the 1950 Treasure Island film. And again, he played him again 4 years later in another film called Long John Silver. He played him in a 50s miniseries in Australia. And he played Blackbeard in 1952 as well. So in the early 50s, he basically created the image of the modern pirate that we have of that with that accent. And he became even more famous because Tony Hancock, who was an up-and-coming comedian at that time, did Robert Newton impressions in his stage act. So he just spread the idea that that's how pirates talk.
There's this one bit where they're burying Mr. Arrow, who has been run off the side with rum. Mm. And Robert Newton goes, "Arr, men," at the end of the breath.
Yes. Because Newton was from Dorset, and he just exaggerated his own accent, and he had that really, like, fever-eyed sort of look of that image of Long John Silver. He also was Bill Sykes in the 1948 David Lean version of Oliver Twist.
Oh, the really bleak black and white one.
I didn't realise, because I'd heard of Robert Newton, I didn't realise what a massive actor he was, because he was in Jamaica in the Hitchcock film. He played Horatio to Laurence Olivier's Hamlet at the Old Vic in a cast that included Michael Redgrave and Alec Guinness. I said he was Bill Sykes. He was Inspector Fix in Around the World in 80 Days, which was pretty fun. Maybe the most successful film of the 50s. But he engaged in a small act of piracy himself, allegedly. Because I read a newspaper article from Thursday, February the 8th, 1951. The Barrier Miner, a New South Wales newspaper, reported on Newton arriving in New York with his four-month-old son Nicholas, whereupon he had to deny charges from his wife in London that he'd kidnapped their baby to take him to New America with him.
Huh.
Yeah, they were having troubled times at the time, and he said he was just bringing him for a few weeks of California sun, and said she has been ill about his wife, denying reports that they were about to divorce, and this was in 1951, and he and his wife divorced in 1952.
And then obviously he became a gay pirate sailing the
sea. Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk about a couple of pirate sort of staples, like Pieces of Eight. We mentioned Pieces of Eight. Do you know what a piece of eight is?
It's a gold coin.
It's a Spanish dollar. Mm. Yeah, it's invented in 1598 to match up with the German thaler. So it was basically the equivalent of it was trade across Europe. It was becoming more widespread. Mm. And the reason it's called a piece of eight is that eight of them would make up a Spanish real, which was a bigger coin.
Yeah, and that's not the same as a doubloon.
Fundamentally different.
Yes. Okay. But the piece of eight was basically a worldwide currency. It was legal tender in the United States when the States became a thing until 1857.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it just became such an recognisable...
It was the Bitcoin of its day.
Yeah, but in many ways, yes. But I think there's probably a thesis in that somewhere.
Yeah.
Buried treasure. Probably didn't happen. But, do you know the William Kidd story?
I do, yeah. Do you know the recent William Kidd, dreadful pirate, probably buried some treasure. Certainly claimed to have buried treasure.
Yeah, he was a privateer who, when he retired, basically wasn't a pirate at all, because he was a privateer who, when privateering was ended, was accused of stealing loads of money that should rightfully belong to the British government. And he said that he'd buried some treasure. Buried some of it as a bargaining chip, basically. In court, he said, "Well, if you let me free, I'll tell you where the buried treasure is." And they were like, "Yeah, you haven't buried any treasure. We're going to execute you. Sorry." But that's where the story. That's why that became famously someone's buried treasure and that's why it's become a bigger... And then obviously Robert Louis Stevenson popularised it in Treasure Island.
Did Kidd then go, okay, I'll make you a better deal. Cut off my arms and my legs and we'll call it quits.
And I won't be able to dig it back up anyway.
Yeah.
I read about some cool lady pirates because there are not that many of them. Do you guys know about Grace O'Malley?
Oh, yeah.
Grána Whale, or Grania Whale, who's an Irish pirate queen. There was a musical about her by the writers of Les Mis about 10 years ago, which didn't do terribly well on Broadway. Now, her name, Grace O'Malley, but her nickname is Grania Whale, which comes from Grania Whale, which means bald, because her father basically said she couldn't come out on raids with him because her hair was too long, get caught in the ship, in the rigging, and she just shaved her hair off and came back to him and embarrassed him into taking her on a raid. And when he died, she basically became leader of the O'Malley tribe, and she ruled from their castle in Clew Bay and Clare Island on the west coast of Ireland. And she commanded 400 men and a small fleet of ships, just would raid up and down the coast, the neighbouring families and clans, but also resisted the English, who was Queen Elizabeth at the time, resisted the advance of the English westward in Ireland at the time as well, and actually met Queen Elizabeth in Greenwich Castle. They went and met her face to face and spoke to her in Latin, which speaks to how well educated she was.
Yeah.
Wow.
My favourite story about her is she lived quite... I think she was in her 60s when she died, so she was in charge for a long time. But she was chiding her son Thibaut in a battle once for... She thought he was shirking his responsibilities.
Yes.
And she said, "On a geary dulla vullock ermachona tautu, an ought a donig to us," in Irish, which means, "Are you trying to hide in my ass the place where you came from?"
Sorry, Ma.
Good pirate, slightly odd knowledge of anatomy. But there's another, the most successful, maybe pirate of all time as a female pirate, called Ching Shi, or Madam Ching. Have you read about
amazing.
Her?
Amazing.
She's so cool. I'd never heard of her. 1775 to 1844 she lived. She was known as Madame Ching because I think she was the widow of a pirate.
Yeah.
And when he died, she took over his fleet and expanded and expanded. So at one point she was commanding probably 300 junks, between 20 and 40,000 sailors. Some say as many as 80,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And to ensure she took over control of this fleet, she married her adoptive son after her husband died.
Wow, so the Woody Allen of the pirate world as well.
Yeah. She insisted that when they took booty, there'd be a group inspection of the booty. So everyone could see what had been taken. Everyone could think be dished out fairly. The person who originally took it got 20%, so they got their commission on it. And then everything else was shared out equally among the crew. Which sounds nice and fair. Rape. If any pirates raped a woman, they would be sentenced to death. However, if they engaged in consensual sex with a woman, the pirate would be beheaded and the woman would be thrown overboard with cannonballs tied to their legs.
Oh, I thought that story was going to end with her being a properly woke feminist, but
no. And even better, if anyone else issued laws or issued orders instead of her, or if anyone indeed disobeyed her own orders, they would be instantly beheaded.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
God, she's like Lucy Liu's character in Kill Bill.
She's really pushing. Like, it's that thing of, oh, if a woman succeeds in business, they have to be even more hard-nosed than the men.
Yeah.
It's
taking it to
a real extreme. And she, there was a pirate amnesty in China in 1809 or 1810, and basically she accepted this amnesty because she'd lost a series of battles and things were beginning to turn against her. And she opened a casino and brothel and lived for the guts of another 35 years, died age 69. So as pirates go, she actually, you know, successfully retired off her earnings and led a, by all accounts, happy life afterwards.
a happy life as the madam of a brothel.
Yeah, well, you know.
There are less happy lives.
Yes, there are.
But imagine going to her brothel, though. Because afterwards...
Yeah.
The guy gets beheaded and the woman gets thrown out a window with cannonballs. Which is a terrible business model.
Yeah.
I want to talk about my favourite pirate before I come to my worst pirate. My favourite pirate is William Dampier.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of William Dampier?
Yeah,
he is the best person you have never heard of if you're listening at home and you don't know who he is.
Hang on.
Yeah.
William Dampier was on board Charles Swan's The guy that Charles Swan went, yeah, he's too lean to eat. That's Will Dampier.
Yeah.
He knew everyone.
He knows fucking... Yeah. Like, literally. I'm going to list some of his achievements. Mm. He's the first man to circumnavigate the globe 3 times.
Mm.
Yeah. He is cited in the Oxford English Dictionary over 1,000 times, including for the word barbecue, avocado, chopsticks, and subspecies.
That's one weird sentence.
Barbecue, avocado, chopstick, subspecies. I think it's Google Translate. Something came out weird.
Yeah, it's definitely from a restaurant in Shoreditch, that, yeah, isn't it?
His writings on travel were used by Nelson, Captain Bligh, Cook, and Darwin. He visited Australia, the north coast, and the west coast of Australia 100 years before Cook arrived. He recorded, it's one of the first recordings of the kangaroo and the koala in European writings. He's recorded the first European record of a typhoon happening.
Yep.
He is mentioned in Gulliver's Travels by Swift, specifically as being an amazing sailor. He engaged in a bit of piracy, often in the west coast of South America and the Pacific, Spanish settlements there.
Mm.
He marooned himself in 1689 off the coast of Thailand and just sort of left the boat on a local canoe and showed up in the UK 3 years later with a tattooed slave prince.
The tattooed slave prince is great.
Yeah, he showed him off and got money for him, just as like a curiosity. Alexander Selkirk was a crew member on one of his ships. Selkirk is famously the inspiration for Robinson Crusoe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't he voluntarily again maroon himself because Dampier was too mad?
Yeah, Selkirk said that the ship, they were on 2 ships, I think, and the ships parted way, and Dampier was off on 1 ship and Selkirk was on the other ship, and then that ship, basically the captain was like, we're going to try and get from this island to another island, and Selkirk's like, this ship is going to fall apart, mate, it's not going to happen. And so he just voluntarily stayed on this island, and the ship indeed sank. But Selkirk was found about 4 years later, having sort of mastered all the hunting and all the things that Robinson Crusoe does. He also on another ship that Dampier was on was a man called Simon Hatley, who famously shot an albatross when they were rounding the Cape of Good Hope, and he's the inspiration for Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Yeah, so, you know, as people go, he knew absolutely everybody.
Yeah, walking encyclopedia entry.
Yeah.
At one point he ran into Lope de Aguirre as well, the crazy conquistador who decided to stop looking for Eldorado and just kill everyone and take over everything. He was sacking and killing everyone in a coastal town. Dampier happened to put into that town and went, oh, no, you're fine. Went off again.
Yeah. But my candidate for the world's worst pirate is Calico Jack Rackham.
Right.
Now, we've mentioned him in Anne Bonny and Mary Read, famous female pirates, and they were part of his crew. Jack Rackham, he started out as a quartermaster on the ship of a man called Charles Vane, which he took over in 1718. Basically, Vane decided they shouldn't attack a man of war, and Calico Jack said, oh, no, you should definitely attack the man of war. There's going to be loads of booty on that. And the captain overruled him, but the next day they had a vote, and the crew said, no, we should have attacked that. We're electing Jack Rackham as our new captain. And democracy ruled on these pirate ships. So they had to let Charles Vane go, by all accounts, quite fairly. Shoved him on a little boat, gave him a bit of booty and a few crew members, and let him go free. The reason he's called Calico Jack, Calico is a type of sort of...
Like what handkerchiefs are made out of.
Yes. It's a type of fabric. And so he wore quite extravagant clothes. So his name was John Rackham, I think, but he called Calico Jack is a bit more piratey.
Yeah, it's better than Handkerchief Jack.
Yeah. And in fact, he's probably the inspiration for Jack Sparrow.
Very much, in the Pirates
of the Caribbean movies, as will become clear. Their ship that they took over from Charles Vane was the Kingston. And on one occasion it was captured when they were ashore, and they just had docked the ship on the beach, and they were on land, and rather than, you know, go and defend it, he and the crew just hid in a wood and watched it being taken by the Spanish. On another occasion they were in a port trying to repair their ship, and a Spanish galleon pulled into the harbour with an English sloop alongside it. They were sort of beached a little bit on a sandbank, so they couldn't get close enough to Jack Rackham's ship that night. So they waited till the next morning for the tide to rise so they get a bit closer. And overnight, Jack Rackham and his crew boarded the English sloop, killed or disabled the crew, took it over, and when the tide rose the next morning, the Spanish galleon started firing on their flagship while the sloop just sailed quietly away.
So very much sort of the runaway and hide type approach to piracy. He applied for a royal pardon in 1720, claiming that Charles Vane had forced him to be a pirate.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of years after he became a pirate. When he applied for this pardon, he applied to the governor of the Bahamas at the time and met James Bonney, who was working for him at the time, as sort of a pirate-turned-gamekeeper figure, helping the British government find these pirates. And it was just at the end of the Pirate Republic, when they'd taken back control of these
coolest
islands.
Coolest thing in the world, the Pirate
Republic. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Sort of for 12, 15 years, just a law unto itself, the Nassau and the Bahamas, yeah.
And they had a constitution which, there is a school of thought, was the inspiration for the American that followed. Yeah,
yeah, it was like the pirates' codes of conduct, quite sort of fair and reasonable. But yes, James Bonney's wife was Anne Bonney, who was this fearsome maid by all accounts. And Jack Rackham offered that he buy Anne Bonney. He offered divorce by purchase to James Bonney, which, women were still considered property, wives were considered property at the time. Anne Bonney very strongly refused that offer, and instead they just eloped together. And they became, you know, a fearsome pirate duo for a couple of months. On one occasion, Bonney became pregnant and went away to have his baby, and during that period, Mary Read became part of the crew. And again, they had to be part of the crew, but disguised as women for long periods, or disguised as men rather for long periods, because the crew were... having a woman on a ship was bad luck, or it would sort of contravene their constitutions that they had.
Yeah, they'll interrupt our soirees.
Yeah, so by all accounts, Mary Read and Anne Bonney got on famously because it was like, you're a secret woman. Great, thank God, I'm a secret woman too. Look, here are my breasts to prove it. They just had someone to talk to. Yeah. And possibly, you know, lessed up a little bit as well. Again, some reports suggest.
You've always got to be suspicious in a pirate crew if there are 10 mates all called Bob.
Yes. They were eventually captured by a pirate hunter, Jonathan Barnett. Bonney and Reed basically were the only two defending the ship. The rest of them were all drunk after a night, or hungover, certainly, from partying. And she chastised Calico Jack, saying, "Had you fought like a man, you need not have been hanged like a dog." And indeed, he was. he was gibbeted on a little islet called Rackham's Cay at the entrance to Port Royal in the Bahamas. But Reed and Bonney got off. They claimed of the belly. They were both pregnant at the time of their trial.
I love that that is a part of law. Defence of the belly.
Yeah.
Mary Read died in prison. It's not entirely sure what happened to Anne Bonney. The most recent research suggests that her father may have basically paid her ransom or her bail.
Her father was a rich lawyer.
Yes. As pirates go, someone whose theory his rules of engagement seem to be let's just not engage, and who was far outshone by the battling maidens on board his ship who had to work a damn sight harder than he did to gain the respect of his crew. You know, Jack Rackham suggests, he conjures up an image of one of the most swashbuckling pirates of the age, and Def just really isn't. Oh, side note, when eventually he lost the Kingston and he had to take over a new ship, what did he call his flagship?
Revenge.
The Revenge. Yeah! So, our candidates for the world's worst pirate are Ben's suggestion of Charles Swan, the portly pirate who suggested he be his crew's main course. Will's suggestion of Francois Lollinet, the man whose favourite main course was the heart of his enemy. And my suggestion of Calico Jack Rackham, who lived to fight another day by running away as often as possible. Charles Swan... Yeah, I like him because he's, you know, doesn't want to be a pirate.
But it's the fact that he kept writing home to go, please make them stop. Yes. As though, especially in the age before telecommunication, the people back in Britain could do anything about it.
Lollinet, as you say, the worst in terms of morals and ethics and any sense of human decency. And Jack Rackham's somewhere between the two of, like, I want to be a pirate, but I'm going to try really hard to not have to do any of the pirate things. I think I'm going to go for Charles Swan.
Charles Swan certainly has my vote as well.
Yeah, okay, good, I'm glad. Just because of...
how hapless he seems to have been. Not in that he didn't want the job at all, and but spent 2 years having to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I was going to suggest Steed Bonnet, but Steed sort of wants to do it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
about the job, he's got that extra thing if he doesn't want to do it, and he's totally shit at it. Steed has a little window where he's actually not bad.
Yeah, it's the thing of, I don't want to be a pirate, and yet here I am being a pirate for an extended period of time.
We've all had jobs like that, haven't we?
He's just, I'm mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore. Mm. Except for the next 2 years. Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's worst news of the week. And this week, the news comes from various sources, including The Sun and The Mirror, which reports that a sex doll that looks like Justin Bieber has nearly sold out. The doll is made with a metal skeleton and a thermoplastic elastomer material. And you can buy it for £1,000. Now, it's not an officially licensed Justin Bieber sex doll. Viewers online have been quick to point out that the bowl cut haircut and the rather sexy abs are a little bit Biebery. And once that word got out, yes, there has been a run on the Bieber sex doll market, and they're hard to come by. Which is a drawback for a sex doll. But the benefits of it include you can choose the penis size.
What is it? A detachable penis you you can unscrew and then let it screw you.
Yes. I think you can order it with whatever size penis you would like.
Fun.
Yeah, the doll is 5'2" tall, and it's available on a website called AliExpress. And it claims that it can flexibly do all sorts of sexy poses. So, now, if you've got any birthdays and you've got a friend who's the person who's got everything, what do you get the person who got everything? A Justin Bieber type sex doll.
I mean, the only reason to get that is so you can hate fuck it.
Before we go, Will, where can people find out more about you?
Oh, I have a website which I have not updated for a long time, but will soon. It's www.willseawood.com. there is the place.
Excellent. Meanwhile, we're all off to board our new flagship, the Justin Bieber's Revenge. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Amen.